If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Former White House counsel Don McGahn fails to show up at a House hearing on his discussions with Donald Trump as the president claims executive privilege will break down the subpoena fights that are taking place between Congress and the executive. Plus, pressure builds from backbench House Democrats on Speaker Nancy Pelosi to open a formal impeachment hearing. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal and here to talk about this clash of congressional branch with the executive. My colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hey, Kim, how are you?
Good. Hi, Paul.
And Bill McGurn. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
So the immediate drama being a fight over the testimony of Don McGahn, who is the former White House counsel, who you will recall gave 30 hours of testimony to special counsel Robert Mueller about his discussions with Donald Trump concerning the Mueller investigation and Russian collusion. And McGahn, according to Mueller, had said that the president told him at one point to go to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein and have him fire Mueller. McGahn said that he ignored that, did not do that, but that has become for some people, since it appeared in the Mueller report, a cause of saying the president is guilty of obstruction of justice. And Congress wants McGahn to come up. Gerald Nadler, head of the House Judiciary Committee, Kim, saying, come on up and we'll talk about that. And McGahn is not going to show up today. And now the word is that the House Judiciary Committee is going to hold him in contempt. Who has the better, stronger legal case here, in your view?
I don't think there's any question that McGahn does, although let's point out that this is not McGahn's decision. He has been directed by the Office of the President to not show up, and the Office of Legal Counsel has issued an opinion making the case for why he should not. And they go through the long history of the executive asserting an absolute immunity for close advisors to have to be compelled to talk in front of Congress about issues of executive privilege. The White House is claiming executive privilege over these discussions and that McGahn has had with the president over the years and his interaction. But the OLC opinion notes that, you know, going back about 50 years, back to 1971, which was in a memo that was actually offered by former Supreme Court Judge Rehnquist, but he was in the White House at the time, saying that there's an absolute immunity against close advisors from having to testify in front of Congress about these issues. And he talks about all the different presidencies that have asserted this over the years, from Obama to Clinton and so on.
I agree with that just from a legal matter. I do think this is the heart, the very heart of executive privilege when you're talking about the White House counsel and the president's conversations. Now, the argument is sometimes made that, since McGahn was allowed to talk to Robert Mueller, there's been a forfeiting of executive privilege in this matter. And but remember, Mueller was part of the executive branch, and you don't forfeit executive privilege within the executive branch by those kinds of conversations. I think the question is more a political one from the White House point of view. Would it have been wiser, rather than have this fight over McGahn's testimony, just to say, all right, go up there and say, you know what, I told Robert Mueller everything I know. I have you can ask me anything you want within the four corners of his report, which is already public. But beyond that, I can't because of executive privilege, and just don't have McGahn now risk a contempt finding by the Judiciary Committee. Now that's a political judgment, not a legal one. But I think there's a strong case for letting McGahn do that.
Yeah, I agree, sort of in the abstract. To me, it raises two questions. This will probably go to the Supreme Court eventually, right? These
it very well
cases,
could, yeah.
Right? And because one of the problems we see is, as Kim points out, in the OLC memo, they invoke a lot of precedent from Democratic presidents and so forth. But we know the courts, when it's Donald Trump, frequently put aside the law and do what they think will best inhibit Donald Trump until it gets to the Supreme Court. So that's one thing. I would agree. I mean, I'm inclined to testify. I would say the political argument against that from the Trump view is, look, we made him available for 30 hours during the special counsel's investigation. We gave the Mueller report. We made it public. We didn't have to do it. Now we're being penalized for our cooperation, and there's no end to it. They're not interested in information. They're just interested in a show, and we're going to take a stand here. So I can sort of see it from either side.
So what do you think, where does this go, Kim? I guess the House will find him in contempt. Then they, McGahn. It's unfortunate for McGahn because he's no longer an employee of the White House. And Trump is in some ways putting him in the lurch by making him vulnerable to contempt. I guess unless the court can enforce, the House rather, can enforce the contempt finding, nothing much will happen.
Yeah, and just to offer the devil's advocate view to him going to testify, I do think that there's a powerful argument that the White House has made and the OLC memo makes, and that it sets a worrisome precedent for future presidents, right? And for the remaining years of this presidency. If you get rolled on this, they're going to continue chipping away at this idea of executive privilege. And so, I mean, I've spoken to some good lawyers who make the case that put Donald Trump aside, that just the prospect of a White House acceding to a Democratic command that a close advisor of the president can be compelled at a time of their choosing to go and have to speak is a worrisome precedent for future White Houses. But on your point of where this goes, look, Nadler's problem, and everyone seems to understand this, is that Congress is inherently weak when it comes to this question. You can issue a contempt citation, but then what do you do? You either have to go and arrest them, use your inherent authority, and no one is suggesting Congress is going to send the marshals out to do that, or you have to go to the Department of Justice and ask them to bring it, or you have to go to court. And I agree with Bill, this is probably going to go up through the court system, but that could take a very long time, potentially even years. And Donald Trump may not even be in office at the time this happens. I think the bigger threat, something Congress has been debating, has been whether or not they should levy very punitive fines on people who do not show up. And that could be a whole new equation if it were to get thrown into this question of what happens with people held in contempt.
Of course, you also have to be able to enforce the fines.
True.
What are they going to do? Send the sergeant at arms to collect? I don't know. We're talking about uncharted territory. And we are talking about the brawl between Congress and the Trump administration over congressional oversight. You're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. And in addition to the fight over Don McGahn's testimony, there is also other subpoenas. And Judge Mehta of District of Columbia Circuit, Bill, has rejected the White House rejection of a separate House subpoena. And he says that the House has the ability to pursue this regarding some of Donald Trump's personal business dealings, and that the White House's objections are not relevant. The White House has said it's going to appeal immediately. This is unrelated to the McGahn testimony. This is separate. This is a separate issue. So this is going to go into the courts as well. In my view, the White House has a weaker position here than it does with McGahn legally.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Look, I'm generally sympathetic to congressional demands for information because of the, I think the Constitution gives Congress most of this power to hold our government accountable. And this case, the reason it has a stronger case is because there's actually a statute that seems to say that Congress has the right to look at anyone's concerns. So the judge, I thought the judge was a little loosey-goosey and, you know, didn't take the arguments that seriously. I'll be curious to see where it goes next. But I understand, I mean, courts are reluctant to say your reason for doing this is legitimate or not legitimate because it's not really their role. It's really their role to say, is this within your authority to do? So it was interesting that the judge wouldn't stay his decision. That may change now that it's going right before the D.C. Circuit, right? That may change. So I have some sympathy for Congress on this, even though I believe they're just doing it for a fishing expedition. I don't think there's the slightest legislative intent, but I do think that they have a case.
Well, it does get the legal question gets down to this question of whether or not there's a legitimate legislative purpose that Congress is pursuing, and the reason that language is relevant is because that's the relevant language in a Supreme Court opinion regarding congressional oversight. And you know, the court has ruled that the Congress is at its strongest in its oversight claims when it is pursuing some kind of legislative purpose. And that's why the White House's responses legally have so often said, you're not pursuing one.
Right.
And this gets this is going to be a key point of the litigation moving forward, Kim. But Congress can really, I think, leapfrog all of that in a legal way if it decides to establish and panel a formal impeachment inquiry. Nobody doubts that Congress has the authority to pursue impeachment hearings and articles of impeachment. And once they do that, pretty much they can pursue just about anything they want with a president as long as they say that they are pursuing crimes and high crimes or misdemeanors.
Right. And just to go a little broad here for a second, you know, the Constitution doesn't say anything about congressional investigations. That being said, most of what we have has been defined by court rulings on this. It's always been implied that Congress possesses such oversight because it also obviously has the power of the purse and the power to produce all legislation. And so by necessity, you would need to be able to monitor those programs and things. So it is at its strongest when it is pursuing a legislative purpose or a legal inquiry, a legal matter. And impeachment is, by definition, a form of a legal matter. That it's almost like a trial, something that the Congress gets involved in. So when Congress goes in front of a court and it can demonstrate a legislative purpose or a legal matter, it is a much greater ability to convince the court that it deserves to see certain documents or to be able to be made in front of it certain witnesses. And, you know, that is the route that the House went, for instance, with Watergate. It put it on a lot firmer standing in terms of the things that it wanted to get a hold of. The problem for these House Democrats is they don't want to go there, right? Because a lot of their members are very nervous about looking to be going down the path of impeachment. They think there would be blowback from the public for that. So they're just playing this weird middle game where they're on a fishing expedition looking for things. And while this initial court may have allowed this to kind of run through, I'm not quite sure if you get to a higher court level, it's going to be that easy.
Yeah, I think this is very much up in the air. And the other virtue of impeachment hearing bill, if the House impanels them, is political accountability. If they do it, the House takes responsibility for it politically, and that's the way the framers defined so much of this. And these battles between the branches of checks and balances, they're ultimately really political questions.
Yeah, Paul, I think that's the most important point. We have a system of accountability that you can do these, you can invoke certain powers, but there are costs and you have to calculate whether they're worth the cost. And so much of what we do today, special counsels, inspector generals, and courts, is designed to get around that. And I think we'd be a lot better off if we could return to that. And the Democrats right now, they want all the power of impeachment and all the authority without actually having to pull the trigger.
And on that point, there's been there was a how should we say, a full and candid exchange of views inside some of the Democratic councils in the last day over this question of whether to impanel a formal impeachment inquiry, with a lot of Democratic backbenchers importuning the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, to start one up. And she has been resisting. She claims it's not going to be to the benefit of the country. That's her argument, that they want this ultimately. She doesn't think impeachment is healthy for American democracy. I think what's unstated, Kim, is that she also doesn't want to have those 40 or so Democrats who provided the new majority for the House just last November to have to face a very tough vote on some of these swing in some of these swing districts on impeaching Donald Trump. And if you start a formal inquiry, it is going to be the process moves, the machine inexorably moves ahead. You have hearings, you'll have tremendous media attention. And then at the end of several months of this, you then say, oh, sorry, no vote. We're dropping the whole idea. No, hard to do.
That doesn't happen. And she understands. Look, Nancy Pelosi is no slouch. She understands that if you begin the machinery of formal impeachment proceedings, meaning that what you do here, the way it works is that you end up having a House vote on the floor for articles of impeachment, which lays out potential crimes, and then that authorizes a judiciary committee to conduct an investigation and conduct hearing. That takes time. It's going to push them into next year. And you don't go through that whole process without holding a vote at the end. And as you said, a lot of those moderates from these suburban districts, they don't want to go there. The Wall Street Journal NBC poll that we recently had came out, said that independents, that crucial voting block within the United States, only 19% of them came out after the Mueller report with the belief that there is enough evidence to begin impeachment proceedings. So, you know, they don't have those swing voters with them on it. And those are the voters who got Nancy Pelosi her majority, and she understands the risk here.
Well, there is that risk, but on the other hand, I think a lot of the backbenchers, in addition to their really profound dislike of Donald Trump bill, their view is politically this might actually work well for us, because even if we don't get a conviction in the Senate, as long as we can get it through the House, an impeachment, articles of impeachment, we can spend the next year just beating beating up this White House again and again and again, and essentially delegitimizing Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think that's their calculation, because though it's true that there are independents who are skeptical of impeachment in addition to Republicans, and that some moderate Democrats may not want this, clearly the mood of the party is resistance, right? Just all-out resistance to Trump. And they might feel once they go down this path that the polls would change. I think that's a big risk, because also there's a lot of other stuff about to drop on, the Inspector General report and so forth. I mean, a lot of this could become very secondary very quickly, depending on what Attorney General William Barr releases about the report for two years.
And just so the viewers know, this is these concerns the investigation into the origins of the FBI investigation into Donald Trump about Russian collusion.
And also Huber's U.S. Attorney Huber's report into the Clinton email thing. So a lot of the debate could change very quickly. I think it's already changed dramatically from the Mueller report. A lot of Democrats are resisting the report and so forth. But I think a lot of Americans say, OK, 2 years, they looked at it. No collusion.
I know a lot of Democrats. I mean, that's where as Kim suggests, the polls are. That's where a lot of Democrats are. I have to tell you, though, if you look at the left in this country, which dominates the mainstream media, and they're moving to say, look, Democrats, if you want to be if you claim to be the principled people you are, if you claim to be really opposed to this destructive president who is a threat to the republic, you must move ahead with an impeachment inquiry and a vote. I think it's going to be before this. I don't know how this is going to end up, and I know, Kim, you're right. Nancy Pelosi is a formidable figure, and she has the support right now of most of her committee chairman and the leadership. But this is going to be hard for her to resist if there's a groundswell of public opinion on the left.
Well, I read an interesting article, and it was actually from just after the election last year. But somehow it popped across my screen in some research I was doing, and it was on Nate Silver's 538 blog. And it talked about how, despite the fact that all of these moderates, Democrats that we're talking about, the crucial ones who did win Nancy Pelosi, her gavel, all the focus on them. In fact, if you looked out what had happened in the broader election, is in a lot of the safe liberal districts, they had run more progressive candidates than at any time before, and they won. And if you look at, for instance, the ratio between blue dogs these days in the Democratic caucus, which are the more moderate members, and then the progressive caucus, the ratio is 4-1 in terms of liberals versus moderates in the Democratic Party. It's the highest ratio you've ever had. So those are the people that are pushing Nancy Pelosi to go down impeachment, and they are definitely the majority of her party at the moment.
And if you hearken back to the Clinton impeachment, I think that there a lot of Republicans would say, you know what, it hurt us in 1998 in that congressional race. But we went ahead and impeached him, and it helped us in 2000 because we were able to run against President Clinton's ethics and Al Gore as his vice president, and we wouldn't have won that election without impeachment.
Yeah, that's above my pay grade because I don't know where that went. I mean, we do know, look, the Republicans, and it was a Republican Senate. They wouldn't follow through, right, on that. So there are, you have to persuade your own party. I mean, the real horror, I think, is for the Democrats is if Mrs. Pelosi can't stop this and the train goes in, can she get the vote to impeach? I mean, she would clearly switch sides because she would not want a loss would be more catastrophic.
If she starts it, in my view,
she has to get the votes. Right.
Kim, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do, because she's very good at twisting arms.
Yeah, and it would be a humiliation to go ahead with it and then lose. All right. But it's going to be quite the drama going forward. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.